You really can't see the coast.
Have you ever been on the coast of Maine?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been at sea and looked back?
No, no. Well, just that's ridden along the coast.
You drive along, but you really don't really see the coast. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons why these dude schooners arrived, because you can take people out, and each day you sail during the day, anchor in a new little harbor, and there are just thousands of little harbors and places to anchor, islands and so forth along the coast of Maine, and people really get to see what it's like. For instance, if you drive on a road, you see a gate and it says private, no access or something like that, but you look back and you see these beautiful Rockefeller's estate on Mount Desert Island and so forth. And so I operated that, met my second wife as a passenger on there, and married her, and finally sold the vessel, and I really enjoyed that. But then I came back to the construction business again, and I retired 4 years ago, almost 5. So that's
any other reflections or particular incidents from your naval years that come to mind? Either anecdotes of your either the DE period or with minesweepers or on the Tennessee, anecdotes involving particular people or events or
no offhand,
overall observations.
After you leave, I'll probably think of many, but right offhand, I don't think of.
Well, you had served on the battleship and on two minesweepers. What kind of observations do you have about the destroyer escort as a vessel?
I thought the Brazier class was an outstanding vessel. It was a powerful, had great speed, but you know, I never really had an opportunity to use it
the way
it was designed to be used. And I've read books, and I've talked with Captain Williamson, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those men who really got into the fighting of the anti-submarine war, and I just can't compare with that kind of thing. I do remember some of the things about the minesweeper. When we were patrolling, we had two 900 horse Alco locomotive engines. Well, you couldn't slow those things down slow enough to creep along the way you had to when you were patrolling a coast and listening for submarines.
Mm-hmm.
If you went faster, you destroyed your ability to hear. And so we had to alternate first on one screw and then on the other screw. And it was on that ship, the 97, the Fierce, that I had that bout with seasickness. I was the navigator and the communication officer, and I would have star sights with a bucket handing on one arm and looking through like that, and all of a sudden I'd have to hand the sextant to the to the quartermaster and lean over, let rip in the bucket.
That was kind of humiliating as well as being...
Yeah, it was. But I've met my commanding officer who said, you know, even though you were seasick as a dog and you wanted to get ashore, you never failed in your duty as a navigator. And I can remember I don't know whether you've ever seen pictures of this electric coating machine. We had the electric coating machine, and it had a bunch of discs, and you had to change the disc in accordance with a prearranged. And God, I would go down below, and there's nothing worse than being down below in a ship when you're sick and there's diesel smell around and everything. And I would just practically crawl on my hands and knees. I just was so sick I couldn't stand up. And
well, the sea really wasn't that rough, was it?
Oh, the North Atlantic is rough out there.
But you had, I thought you'd indicate that you got sick from the time you hit the Gulf of Mexico right on.
I did. It was even worse up there in Maine than it was down in the Gulf of Mexico. So, and from that time, after I was through with that, I never was seasick again until I went with a friend of mine to deliver a boat from the southern coast of Massachusetts through the Cape Cod Canal. And I had the second watch, and we were down below, and he was lighted in his cabin with kerosene lamps. And I got up for my watch, and I got outside, and I was so sick. Oh, jeez. I just laid down on the deck and near the rail. I just couldn't function. And I just don't understand, because I went through typhoons in the Pacific where it was so rough that we took our mattresses out of the bunks and just laid on the bottom of the bunk with our feet spread and our hands like that, because the mattresses would move so much on springs. And I'll be at a loss to understand why. So I can say that I went on a roller coaster in Copenhagen, and it was such a G-force on the thing that I began to have stomach trouble there. And but I suppose people get adjusted. If you have a continuous acquaintance with the motion, that you get over it, your body acclimates itself to the.
Well, now you mentioned that the minesweeper had locomotive engines. Were they locomotive engines that had been adapted for Navy use, or were they just the same?
They were just Alco. They were the standard Alco engine. That's why they were. These minesweepers were PC hulls, you know, the steel PC hull, and they just. They had to put those minesweepers out fast, because the Germans had developed these all sorts of mines. We had paravanes, we had acoustic knockers, and we had the electric cables, magnetic cables. Mm-hmm. And we did have an awful lot of trouble degaussing ourselves. Mm-hmm. We had to run a degaussing range every time we went in and out to make sure that we blow the hell out of ourselves.
Yeah.
But the people on minesweepers are real seamen. When you get in the North Atlantic and you're rigging those heavy paravanes out over the side with the explosive cutters on them and so forth, that's...
I was getting ready to say, that's probably not the kind of duty that many people would want, is it?
Well, of course, nobody had a choice, really. Certainly the men, I don't think, had a choice. I liked it because it was... I think there's a real thrill out of being a competent seaman, mm-hmm. being able to... Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to tell you about... training my officers. When we came in to Lady Harbor, I used to get out of my cabin over the side in a boat and go to the officers' club. And the officers, in rotation, first one would take it to the tanker. That's the first thing you had to do. The second one would take it to the supply ship. And the third one would take it to the anchorage and anchor it. And then the next time, they would pick up the thing like that. And I really had the guys trained. I had no qualms. The only accident that we ever had, have you ever handled a twin screw ship?
No.
Well, one of the things is that if you're coming in, here's a dock or a ship, if you're coming in like that and you've got too much weigh on, your natural inclination is to back down, stop. That's no way. You can't stop it that way. The only thing that you can do is to go ahead full on that inboard engine. My golly, it's raining.
It's having rain. They had predicted it.
And I tried to get that across to my officers. And I would sit there in my chair and bite my lips and let them find out for themselves. And on this one occasion, this officer got frightened. He was scared to death. He was coming in too fast. And he just didn't have guts enough to go ahead full on that inboard engine. And he took, and he hadn't dropped his anchor. So the fluke of the anchor punched a hole in the upper level of the tanker. And I went to the commanding officer of the tanker and told him, you know, what I'd been trying to do. And he says, don't make any report. He says, I got welders here. I'll fix it up and it'll be all right. But I think that was a good lesson for everybody that was watching to see that just backing down, he backed down full on both engines and it wouldn't do anything. Didn't slow it enough to punch it right in.
Oh, very cool.
Personal friends, I just finished reading a book called 73 North. It's about a British convoy that went up to the north to deliver a convoy to Murmansk. And they were attacked by the full force of the German fleet with, I think it was a Nice Now, and the, I can't even remember all the ships that were there. And they only had about four or five escorts, and they weren't major vessels. And the life that they went through. And at this London reunion that we had, the British skippers were invited. Those who took over the, was it 141 old four-stack destroyers, plus those who had taken over frigates and other ships that we gave them. I sat beside this skipper who had had three escorts torpedoed from underneath him. And his fourth one, he was just coming out of Murmansk to start the return trip. He was torpedoed right outside the harbor. He was able to get back in, and they patched him up. The convoy went on, leaving him to go alone. Well, he was probably safer going alone back because they wouldn't waste aircraft on just a lone escort.
Right.
But to have four ships shot out from underneath you or torpedoed, and my God, how those guys ever lived in that kind of water.
Not for long, they wouldn't.
No, they certainly wouldn't. But they usually had some sort of a little trawler that tagged along to pick them up, to pick up survivors, try and salvage their trained personnel.